Hello, everybody. My name is Rowan, and this is Rowan's Gadget Talk for Tuesday, 8th of December, 2020. Obviously, we have a lot to talk through. The S21 is coming out early next year. Obviously, come January and February, we'll probably have the S21 series. So that's freaking awesome. We have a lot of details coming out about the S21. So let's get cracking right in. First, interestingly, YouTuber SakiTech posted a video. And more specifically, he showed off the S21 Ultra and S21 Plus out in the wild as it is. No renders, no photorealistic ray tracing kind of renders. These are actual photos that someone took of these two phones. And it reveals a lot about what these phones could possibly have. So the S21 Ultra on our left basically is obviously the multi-sensor madness that is the Ultra phones from Samsung. There are 5 sensors on this. The interesting part is that how these real-life photos kind of match the renders that everyone's been showing off the last couple of months, where essentially the camera bump, the camera sensor, the hood, is like kind of melting off to the side, like it's sort of a bending kind of. It's all glass, and then the rest of the body is like matte metal. It has matte finish. So the Ultra has 5 sensors, including a telescope zoom kind of lens that looks like it from a squarish little box on the third bottom sensor. And then the S21 Plus has 3 regular equally sized sensors, and the holes look a little bit like the Note 20. Obviously they are modifying it model by model, so it gets better pretty much. So it's hard to describe. I mean, how I can describe it essentially is what it exactly looks like in the renders, but it's a little bit more realistic. So there's like kind of glass melting off to the side, and obviously a matte finish. Obviously, we can't show photos on audio, through audio, but you'll get the idea. I mean, so that's the S21 Plus and the S21 Ultra from the looks, pretty much. So, yeah. So we know a whole lot about the S21 at this point, but interestingly enough, the S21 Ultra's cameras have kind of been leaked out, and so we now have a good idea exactly, probably have a bit of a good idea exactly what the 5 sensors will have. Obviously the first sensor on the top is a 12 megapixel ultrawide sensor, 1.4 micrometer, 1x2.55 inch sensor size, IMX563 sensor with dual PD, pretty much. I have to learn a lot of camera meanings here. PD meaning. Interesting enough. Doesn't know what that means, but Oh well. So dual PD sensor, along with a 108 megapixel, 0.8 micrometer wide sensor, 1.33 inch sensor, a HM3 sensor, which has a known as Super PD. I don't know what that means again. And a 10 megapixel, 10 times, it actually was in the document 5, but apparently it's been crossed over as 10x, a folded telephoto sensor, 10 megapixel sensor, a 3J1 sensor, apparently, 10 megapixel, 1.22 micrometer, 1x3.2 inch sensor with dual PD, autofocus, yes, okay, now got it, a autofocus built in, so that's interesting, a laser autofocus sensor, LED flash, 3 megapixel telephoto, 10 megapixel, okay, 10 megapixel, 1.2, it's the same as the folded telephoto, okay, that probably is where the periscope zoom lens will be, but there's a 3x telephoto sensor, 10 megapixel, a 3J1 sensor. This actually is the ISOCELL Fast 3J1, so it's 1.22 micrometers, 1x3. So essentially, you'll have 2 zoom sensors, but there'll be a 10x periscope lens from the looks of it, so that's interesting. So typical grid of sensors for an Ultra phone, so that's pretty much interesting. It's interesting that they're going for laser autofocus. Don't know how that'll help, but okay. I was thinking they could use LiDAR, but well, it's kind of overkill for now, and it's not gonna do for cameras, and probably expensive to get LiDAR sensors. So, apparently, the 3x telephoto will be able to do 3 times optical zoom, and then and in the folded periscope sort of sensor that is sitting down below, will take go into action when it hits 10 times magnification. So it's only the same set of sensors, but I'll switch over to the second one. So that's interesting, to say the least. So yeah, so that's definitely a camera worth looking out for. And then finally, and last bit of S21 news, really, apparently, the S21 series, all of the phones, may not come with a wall plug or headphones and wall charger or earphones in the box, which is pretty disgusting. Apple's done that, but that's Apple as Apple. Apple thinks differently. Samsung, well, I don't know what their slogan is. Samsung needs to offer a galaxy of experiences. Haha, see what I did there. It's crazy how they're kind of ditching the charger and the earphones. I mean, Samsung kind of mocked Apple before, probably a few months back, showing off that the wall plug is included. So, I mean, so this could basically be, this is pretty silly of Samsung that they're ditching a wall plug. I mean, and also with Android phone makers, it's all right. I mean, it's not a big deal, really, if they throw out the wall charger. If you're buying such an expensive phone, you'll already buy a fast charger, or obviously have the previous wall plug in the box. So it's kind of environmental purposes. But also, Samsung obviously wants to make more money. So if they obviously could offer you a fast charger, and it costs like $50 or something, they can make money off you straight away. So So how do we know this is happening? Apparently, the S21 series of phones have already been certified for sale in Brazil by the Brazilian regulator Anatel. They've certified the S21 for sale in Brazil. That's kind of required. But they wrote in their certification that the phones will not have a charger or headphones. So if I can read clearly. Yeah, it has like a little warning in the certification. So it says that it won't come with the, I mean, if I could zoom this in, that is. So, need a translation. So, so it stated that this model will not probably come with a wall plug or headphones. But it did kind of state that it can charge at this capacity without a problem. It can go up to 25 watts. Need to see what the translation is. I mean, give me a sec. So in the certification, is clearly in bold. It's written in bold. The cell phone will not be sold with a power supply, as it is written in the certification here. And in another bold point, it's written here that the cell phone will not be sold with headphones. They've written that too. The first point that they written that won't come with a wall plug, they mentioned in certain models that it can charge at up to 25 watts, obviously with the kind of very technical description of the charge setting. So says up to 3 amperes. It can charge it between 2.77 and 3 amperes, and that means that essentially it will be able to go all the way up to sort of 25 watts by our best estimations. I mean, if you do the math, that you could easily at that level 10, you do the math right there. I mean, you could hit 25 without a problem. So that's interesting. Obviously, a lot of people are mad all over the world, especially in Brazil, where a tech blog has actually broke the story. A lot of people seem to be mad at Samsung, more like Samsung trolled Apple, and now Samsung is playing an Apple on everybody. And this is interesting in the exact same country where, on the previous episode, we talked about how Brazilian authorities, mainly in Sao Paulo, the consumer protection regulators there, have been mad at Apple for ditching the wall plug too there. Interestingly, the exact tech blog mentioned that Apple made a statement that using third-party chargers for the iPhone will not really affect the warranty if anything happens. So that's kind of interesting. So there you have it. That's all your S21 rumors right there, what we've been hearing about the S21. So yeah, plenty to look forward to. So while we're at it, Samsung, we kind of also been talking about the foldables that are going to come out in 2021. And now, according to also this exact same publication that has talked about it in depth, the ELEC, essentially, They've also now claimed that Samsung is planning to launch three foldable phones next year, according to OLED research firm UBI Research. So likely, and this is their estimation, it'll likely be a Galaxy Z Flip 2, a Z Fold 3, and a Z Fold Lite. Now, they've had a lot of details, so let's just go through this real quick. All three models will use ultra-thin glasses cover windows, which is the cover display, essentially, which is interesting. This came in the Z Flip, the ultra-thin glass display, the UTG that came in the original Z Flip last year. This year, pretty much. Forget 2020 happened. That's interesting. And speaking of the Flip, really, the Z Flip 2, and this is where, I mean, if you're watching this highlight already, you'll see the kind of the render. It kind of makes sense. When I first saw this, I was like, this is interesting. It looks like that. That's interesting. So the Z Flip 2 will have a 6.7-inch internal display, obviously edge-to-edge, so that'll be pretty thin. So it'll be a tad bit bigger than the Z Flip from the looks of it, because obviously it's edge-to-edge, pretty much. It's bezel-less. On top of a 3-inch external screen. This is a bump up from the 1.1-inch little screen, the eeny meeny miny mo status indicator LED, like eeny meeny miny mo display with the right by the camera on the Z original Z Flip, which is, I think, a big deal, kind of. So this is bringing the Z Flip 2 neck and neck with the Moto Razr. The Moto Razr had a slightly big, I think it was 2 inch, it was a little bigger than a wearable display, kind of outer display, so that still showed, that had a little bit of screen for a camera, and you could take photos, and you know, and you could browse to stuff, and play back stuff. But 3-inch external display is interesting, so you won't have to really open the phone, you can do a quick little glance at it, as I said, so that's pretty interesting. So that was the Z Flip 2. There's no change to the whole display design, according to the research firm here, so that's interesting. And then you have the Z Fold 3. Now this is where things get interesting. This is quite spicy details here. So the Z Fold 3 will be a bit fancier. It'll have a 7-inch internal display, a 4-inch external display. So if you notice, the outer display, the 4-inch outer display, will be a tad bit smaller than the Z Fold 2, which is interesting. So it'd be back to the Galaxy Fold days, where essentially there's a thick bezel on top, there's a thick bulge on the top and bottom. But there's a totally good reason to why they probably have a little smaller display. The Z Fold 3 will have an under-panel camera and offer stylus support. And you'll need to pack that in somewhere, right? So they'll have to sacrifice a little bit of space on the outer display. And now I think about it, it makes sense, given that they could do that. More interestingly, on top of the under-panel camera, we don't know exactly how it'll work, but we'll probably find out over time. The screen will have low-temperature polycrystalline oxide with LPTO thin film transistors applied for better battery efficiency in the screen. I'm going to say that probably. It says power efficiency, but oh well. So that's interesting. So it'll probably be a super expensive $2,000 phone waiting to happen. And more than everything, now we talked about how Samsung could be ditching the Galaxy Note series, and they're going to focus on the Z Fold phones, and how they're going to offer an S Pen on the Z Fold 3 and on the S21 Ultra if they could probably do that. More interestingly, they've added this point. Now, to allow the S Pen to work on the Z Fold 3, Samsung's been researching ultra-thin glass with a thickness of 60 or 100 micrometers. This is thicker than the glasses used for foldable phones this year that obviously have 30 micrometers. 30 micrometers allows for the glass to be more flexible, but cannot withstand the pressure from a pen point without leaving a mark. Now, that's with ultra-thin glass, so they're probably looking to use a little slightly thicker ultra-thin glass to withstand the S Pens as kind of crossing around. I don't know what they're going to do, obviously. They might change the S Pens' tip a little bit to make it more durable for the thin glass, but they're working on it. 60 micrometers or thicker glasses can withstand its pressure but is less flexible. Samsung Displays were collaborating with LPKF of Germany to make the area of the screen that is folded more flexible. So they probably are doing more innovation in that department. They're probably playing around with what ticks with the display. So they're making it a bit more, you know. So what I'm thinking is the left and right side, it opens like a bookcase. So the left and right side have slightly thick glass, and the bulge, I don't know what you call it, the area with the hinges, so that it pops out, and it's like this area in the middle, that's going to be slightly thinner. I don't know how that will work. It'll probably cause a crack earlier than the left or right side of the inner display, so that's interesting. And then finally you have a Z Fold Lite. Now, this is going to be a super budget version of the Z Fold 3 from the looks of it. It'll ditch a lot of the fancier features for a 7-inch internal display and just a 4-inch external display only, and no extra fancy schmancy specs in-display camera or S Pen. It'll just be a regular Z Fold 3, but it'll probably not have a lot of the fancier features. It'll probably be a $1,500 device from the looks of it. I'm just saying, we really don't know much at this point. So Z Fold Lite could probably, according to UBI research, launch in the first quarter of 2021, whereas the Z Flip 2 and the Z Fold 3 could launch by Q3 of 2021. So obviously by then we'll have more to mention, so that's interesting. So there have been your foldables. What do I think, honestly? It's kind of interesting that Samsung is looking to launch 3 foldables this year. More interesting is that it's kind of nice that Samsung is going to add a bigger external display, outer display, whereas the Z Fold 3 looks very ambitious with what they're offering here. I mean, you got an inner display, a camera that essentially is built in into the display and pops out instead of when you open the camera app. That's interesting. I don't know how they're going to pull that off. And S Pen, I think the Z Fold 3 looks even more ambitious than the Z Fold 2. And they also, another report was that the Z Fold 3 could be a slightly thinner, but I don't know how that's going to be here, but it looks all exciting. So yeah, this year is definitely exciting for foldables. They're going to make it a whole lot more exciting, so that's that. So these were your foldables, so that's all we have to say here until for now. We don't know much really. So, yeah, this could change over time, that's for sure. These are just reports, really. Reports could be true or false. So, yeah, can't wait for these actual Z foldables to come out. It'll be exciting. So, the future is unfolding, that's for sure. The galaxy is unfolding completely. See what I did there? So, yeah. So, earlier on, I think I was recording this a little early in the day, and I was about to say that Apple is planning to release a new device today, probably because a leaker stated it that could be a bit of a Christmas surprise. But now we have Apple has released a brand new product. Can you take a guess to what it is? Well, if you already scrolled through Twitter at this point, it's Apple's newest product, sort of in the audio genre. Basically, imagine AirPods, but they're over-ear headphones. Obviously, I'm talking about AirPods Max. Apple has just released these brand new wireless headphones called the AirPods Max, which feature this over-ear design, which is interesting. Now, they're claiming a lot of perks about the AirPods Max. Now, honestly, I was surprised. Firstly, I was shocked at the name AirPods Max. Talk about using the word Max in everything. like the iPhone 12 Pro Max, you know, because you got to go to the Max. Anyways, so the thing about the AirPods in general is that they're obviously one of the most popular wireless earbuds in the world, hands down. It's probably helped Apple conquer that segment. And obviously, everyone's rushing to create probably better wireless earbuds than Apple themselves. But the interesting part about the AirPods Max and not the AirPods Studio, I mean, I thought the Studio name would make sense because of the quality, but maybe Max made sense because it's obviously bigger and more immersive and more powerful. So the AirPods Max features Apple H1 SoCs on left and right ear cups. Along with that, you get get adaptive EQ, active noise cancelling, transparency mode if you use the AirPods Pro, where essentially you could just kind of block out and you can cut out whatever you're listening to hear what's happening in the real world. You get real-world audio fed in real time, and spatial audio, which kind of would be a bit like Dolby Atmos. Obviously, you could watch something straight from Apple TV Plus and feel the... Well, I don't know what Apple TV Plus show I'm thinking about. For All Mankind, you feel the intensity, and you're in the scene. So that's the power of obviously spatial audio and stuff, and computational audio that Apple is bragging about with the AirPods Max. Obviously, in terms of design, it has this knitted mesh design that's come straight from the HomePod on the headrest, on the headband. And the ear cup and the ear cups that you have, and essentially they're supposed to be quite mushy and comfy. You can understand how I mean by cushion. I don't know. Honestly, from the looks of it, it doesn't look that much comfortable. Like, after like 2 hours of use, you probably start to feel pain. I don't know how comfortable it is. Maybe it is a bit smushy. We'll have to find out. But on top of that, with it, you have this, you have basically the two air cups can swivel pretty much 360 to give you like, so you can swivel it around. And essentially you have this aluminium design on the left and on the cans. The cans, obviously, I'm using terminology for over-ear headphones, so bear with me. But the cans are made aluminium, kind of, you know, and it has multiple ear microphones across to help with noise cancellation technology. And on the right ear cup, or the can, on the right ear cup, you have a little button that kind of activates voice cancellation and so the noise control button easily switches between active noise cancellation and transparency mode. This is what you'd probably do. And the digital crown, which is straight from the Apple Watch, helps with toggling the volume, enabling Siri, answering and ending calls, skipping tracks, and all that good stuff. AirPods Max ear cushions use acoustically engineered memory foam to create an effective seal for immersive sound, and Apple-designed knit textile wraps each ear cushion for added comfort. That sounds really cool. From the canopy to the cushions, every part of the AirPods Max is carefully crafted to provide a comfortable fit and exceptional acoustic performance for each individual. All in all, you're supposed to have great-sounding headphones, and they're pretty comfy, and they're pretty rich. So, their headphones, y'all be thinking, how does it sound like? Now, no one has done sound tests, and we don't know what the sensors, how they sound like, so we'll have to wait for the reviews to come out, that's for sure. So, that's sounding interesting. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of overall the what the cans have, as I like to say, the AirPods Max features a 40mm Apple-designed dynamic driver that offers, obviously, rich deep bass, accurate mid ranges, crisp, clean, higher frequency extensions. Every note can be heard, so that's interesting. But on top of that, you have a unique dual neodymium ring magnet motor, which helps deliver a richer sound. And that means you get a total harmonic distortion of less than 1% across the audible range, even at maximum volume. So it doesn't crap out pretty much. Obviously, I earlier mentioned that the AirPods Max pretty much has an Apple H1 chip on both ear cups, which gives you and a custom acoustic design. And that means you get like a pretty rich audio experience. It's well tuned, kind of. So the H1 SoC has 10 audio cores capable of processing 9 billion operations per second. And this is a feature that Apple likes to call computational audio, which means that using computational power to essentially deliver a richer audio experience and obviously tweak the sound and improve it wherever it can do it as it sees. So it helps deliver adaptive EQ, active noise cancellation, transparency mode, and spatial audio. So let's go to these four unique sound software-driven features, you could say. First is spatial audio. The AirPods Max obviously can do spatial audio with dynamic head tracking with the iPad or iPhone or iPad in real time, obviously, combining the gyroscope accelerometer in both the AirPods Max and your iPhone and iPad. This means that the AirPods Max can essentially, basically, if the content you're watching, this depends on the supported content, if it's in 5.1, 7.1 surround sound or Dolby Atmos, it'll basically bring the audio objects that are essentially in that 360 direction. So if, let's just say, if a rocket ship's coming from the right side and it's going to crash into Earth, it's going to go from, say, your left to your right ear, but it's using, as I said, that head tracking. And if you move to the right, it'll just move it with yourself, and that's pretty cool. So you get full spatial audio. And the fact that they're combining sort of the soft, so obviously they've coded it into the SoC and obviously the and your iPhone, iPad. I mean, I think it's part of Apple, so the ecosystem is to deliver those really tuned, optimized experiences that you can't find on third-party brands. And I think this is one of those. This is interesting. So, you know, kind of connecting both the AirPods and your iPhone, for example, and you're watching a show on Apple TV Plus, and sort of it knows that a car will just jump over or a car will just crash in or it'll start raining. And so it also adapts the cans, essentially, and essentially, you know, and it'll move the audio. It'll just switch audio objects. So you know, you turn to your left, you go far from the rain. So it's kind of interesting. And then the two other two or let's say three features have come from the AirPods Pro, pretty much. So this is essentially just glorified over-ear AirPods Pro. Transparency mode, which is, if you have the AirPods Pro, you know what I'm talking about, and active noise cancellation. So active noise cancellation obviously uses the multiple microphones that are on the AirPods Max, and obviously uses that to sort of cut out noise, if there's any, and adjust sort of noise cancellation. And in transparency mode is that, but essentially you can press a button and you can hear in real time the rest of the world. So you just put it on, you hear like a yee, and then you hear the rest of the world. And adaptive EQ essentially is, it adjusts the audio to your fit and seal of the ear cushions. So it's measuring the sound signal, so bringing out rich audio. And this is the power of computational audio on the AirPods Max. I mean, I really want to call it the AirPods Pro Max, because it kind of is. And obviously, like every AirPods out there, it comes with the easy-to-use one-tap sort of setup and connect and pairing. And on top of that, you could obviously, like any other AirPods, you can get it, you can click a button and switch it between different devices, and Siri works on it and all that good stuff. You get 20 hours of battery life on the AirPods Max, to 20 hours of high fidelity audio talk time and movie playback with ANC enabled and spatial audio enabled. If you cut those out, obviously you can get longer battery life as always with these devices. The AirPods Max comes with a soft, slim, smart case that puts AirPods Max in ultra low power state that helps to preserve a battery charge when not in use, or a pretty funky case that looks like a pouch, like a handbag pouch from Louis Vuitton. Anyway, so essentially it is an AirPods Max, it's an over-ear AirPods, and it's really cool. But here, get this, you can get them, you can pre-order them today, and you'll get them next week starting at $549 USD. Prices may vary where you live, subject to taxes and stuff. $550 for AirPods Max. This is bananas for AirPods Max, to say the least. I mean, is this bananas what we have here? I mean, it's a lot of money. I mean, honestly, I think what you're paying for is that computational audio. And the fact that you get spatial, like surround, really virtual surround sound that's accurate, and ANC, and obviously the Apple ecosystem. If you really have all Apple devices, like 100% Apple, you're not any 1 inch, you're not out of the Apple ecosystem, this sounds like a good idea. But honestly, if you're an Android dude, or you don't have a lot of Apple gear, honestly, do yourself a favor. I mean, $550 is lots of money. It's an investment for high fidelity audio. And if you don't understand how good audio is, or how you want rich movie or music listening experience, you want to watch TV shows and movies when you want crystal clear audio, like as if you're in a cinema, go spend $550. But frankly, for the rest of humanity, there's some great options that are way less than that. Obviously, if you want to spend that kind of money, buy some Bilkern. I mean, this is coming straight for those premium wireless headsets that are available on the market from, let me see, this is British brand. Let me kind of clear myself here. Honestly, just like Bowers and Wilkins, Bang & Olufsen, Bose and Sony headphones, they're some of the best. I mean, my advice, I mean, get, if you have that kind of filthy amount of money to buy wireless headphones, over-ear headphones, this is Sony WH-1000X Mark IVs. Some of the best in the business. And it costs like $400. So you're getting a bargain right here. And then the Bose noise cancelling headphones, $700. They're the best in the business. And then obviously I brought up the British brand Bauer & Wilkins. $400. This is for the PX7s. Super famous over-ears from them. And let's see, how long battery life do you get here? Now we're starting to compare expensive headphones. I mean the difference between Apple and say Bauer & Wilkins is Bauer & Wilkins, they tune the audio really crystal clear, so you don't have to worry about like quite nutty and cracky audio quality. It's just you get crispy tuned audio from the get-go, whereas I mean Apple, you're just betting on the software really to pull off tricks here. I mean, if it is. So the PX7 is $400. Let me check back and see if this is the one. If you live in Britain and you want to spend like good money on pretty premium headphones, I mean, I've got up the actual price now. 350 quid for Bowers & Wilkins PX7s. I mean, they look super stylish. They kind of twist around. You get 43.6 mm drivers and like good tuning and adaptive noise cancelling. 30-hour battery life. Apparently, according to their website, 30 hours of battery life, it's long enough to get you from San Francisco to London and back with time to spare. This is bananas. Like, I mean, I don't know if Apple is able to pull this off, then okay. But I'm sure that a lot of people will buy it because it's Apple, the Apple brand name. Same story with the AirPods. You know, like there are millions of other brands, high quality, well tuned. You get the point. But Apple, the brand name. You know, go to an Apple store. They go show you off the AirPods. You buy it. You know, those who have an Amex card, the same people who buy AirPods are probably the ones who have an Amex card. They can afford it. You know, and then to obviously compare another super expensive headphone brand, Bang & Olufsen. I mean, I've actually tried one of their sort of headphones. I mean, there's a big difference between it and say Beats. Like one day, many years back, just mind you, and this is probably for my folks back in Bahrain. See, this is another one to compare. The Beoplay H9 third gen, it's 500 euros from them. You get 25 hour battery life, and advanced active noise cancellation. I mean, neck and neck. Neck and neck. I mean, like, honestly, if you don't live in the Apple world and you don't really care about headphones, there are other good choices. And then there's obviously a more affordable option, the Sony HH1000 more X 1000Xs, really, from Sony. Those are really good. If you have everything Apple, really, your phone's an Apple. I'm sorry, iPhone guy, iPad, you know, Apple TV, Mac. You live in the Apple world. This is good, but really, there are better options out there and guaranteed good sound quality. I mean, no one should be spending $550, mind you, on some ridiculous set of headphones. We don't even know how well tuned they are. We can't really. Apple's not really an audiophile's choice, if you know what I mean. And for context, the Bang & Olufsen headphones, you get a pouch, you get a wired headphone jack, 3.5 mm headphone jack, and a flight adapter. I don't know if the Apple will offer that in the box. You only get a lightning cable. That's what you get with almost. And this one I'm mentioning here is $50 less. And if you buy it in a sale, then good on you though. So I mean, if you don't really use Apple a lot, just buy other premium headphones. They're probably better. But I'm sure people are gonna buy it because it's Apple. So that's how I see it here. Then that's AirPods Max right there. I mean, there are lots of other good choices, I'll tell you. And at least the audio quality is perfect if you're discerning of a consumer. All right, and let's just jump straight to lots of stories we've kind of read over the last couple of days, and obviously these past days. LG is planning to outsource more the design and production of a lot of low-end and mid-range phones because apparently it has lost a lot of market share and it needs to grow and make money. So obviously it's outsourcing because apparently it made a new management role to handle outsourcing. So that's just insane. I mean, LG used to be on the top of the world, but now other brands are winning it. Google Stadia is rolling out, fine, now rolling out to Austria, Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, and Switzerland. Just in time for Cyberpunk 2077's launch on December 10th. That's 2 days' time, pretty much. The way to access is you could pay 10 euros a month for Stadia Pro, and you'll have to get the game itself separately, so that's something to look out for. But on top of Stadia Pro, you get tons of games for free for the moment, so that's that. And then there's another, and as I said, and another interesting thing I want to bring up. Now, in the UK, obviously, there's been this whole push to electric vehicles. In the UK, sales of EVs, sales of regular petrol and diesel cars will be banned by 2030. This was actually supposed to be done in 2040. It's going back 10 years behind, so 10 years back. So now it's 2030. So you're not allowed to buy a petrol car. Until then, you'll have to upgrade to an electric car. And in the UK, and in the little town of Braintree in Essex, the first full electric car charging station has been opened. The GridServe Braintree electric forecourt is the first of its kind in the United Kingdom. It apparently features 36 EV chargers capable of charging all kinds of available EVs in the British market. Everything from your Honda E's to your Teslas to your Taycans, you name it, they have a charger right there. I actually saw a video from Fully Charged on YouTube. I'll link that in the show notes. It was really good, like showcasing the whole station pretty much. So you get 12 DC chargers that can charge up to 350 kilowatts, so for cars like Taycan and the newer electric SUVs. Another 12 DC chargers that can charge up to 90 kilowatts for your Bolts and all those sorts of cars. 6 AC chargers for those older vehicles up to 22 kilowatts. 6 Tesla superchargers. So if you got Teslas, you're also welcome. And apparently you could charge all kinds of cars, and even electric lorries and trucks can use the chargers here. And essentially, you'll have to pay for the charging, and it's only 24p per kilowatt hour, which is a good deal. So one of the cheapest charging rates in the UK. So essentially you can get you can charge up a whole car for under 10 quid, which is not too shabby. So overall, you get 350 kilowatts of power. And apparently, this is all through renewable energy. They have a whole grid of solar panels next door to the forecourt. And there's a 6 megawatt hour battery to help with power supply, with supplying power even on cloudy days. So essentially, there's enough energy on the batteries to charge 24,000 miles on EVs, pretty much. So lots and lots of cars. And then obviously, this is a full forecourt. So there's a Dovey Edge bookstore and a Costa coffee there, and meeting rooms. And it's really all cool. And it's all powered on solar. And it's one of the first of its kind in Britain. Now, the company itself, GridServe, is planning to open 100 more than 100 of these places across the UK over the next 5 years. And if you're really interested in going, this is located in Essex. This is located in the little town of Braintree by Essex. Which motorway is this by? Let me see. This is on the A131 motorway in the UK, right by Braintree. So if you live there, go check it out and do charge your car there. And they also offer EV leasing programs, so you can go get an EV from there too. So they really are advocating the use for EVs. So that's pretty fun. And I'll link the video down below. Go check it out for yourself. That pretty much explains the whole concept really well. And finally, this came out yesterday, and it was quite sad for me because I'm a bit of an IKEA fanboy. IKEA is discontinuing its catalog after sort of a whole 70 years of the catalog being there. So if you do the math, that's been since 1940. Jeez, that's a long, long time. I mean, no, then that 1950, technically. This is because obviously more and more people are shopping online, and obviously as a result more and more people are sort of browsing and shopping IKEA's website to either buy online on their site or to go in store and then buy it. They're just checking it out on their phones and tablets and obviously through a website and app. Apparently their online retail sales have increased by 45% in the last year, and IKEA.com basically has report at 4 billion visits. That's like, do the math right there. That's essentially, if one person visited IKEA's website at a time globally, that'd be more than half of the world's population gone through IKEA's website. It's bananas. I'll probably admit, I also visited IKEA's website a few weeks back. So apparently, 4 years, I mean, at its peak, just for fun fact, they've printed over 200 million catalogs that were in 32 languages, because IKEA stores are in every corner of the world. The IKEA catalog is the most published piece of document on earth. There are more copies of the IKEA catalog than the Bible or the Holy Quran. This is bananas. I mean, I actually have one at home. It was a few years. I think it was when IKEA opened in Bahrain. And there was when it opened. There was a catalog I got for that 1 year, and I think we threw it away. That's the thing. The thing is, we want to window shop IKEA, we just visit their website or just actually go to the store itself. So is this bananas, really? I mean, it's kind of sad that they've discontinued their catalog. I mean, apparently IKEA will commemorate the catalog. It'll just conclude it with a book that'll launch in the autumn of 2021, obviously for next year's collection, next year's sort of collection that they have. This is just, and obviously they claim by August 2020 of the following year prices go down, but hey, throughout the year the prices obviously go down, so that's the perk of being online. But it's kind of sad that they've discontinued the catalog. I mean, I don't know what to say really. It's just a bit of a moment of silence for that little big book that showed ideas for your home. I mean, that was the greatest piece of marketing for a brand like IKEA. I think there's a lot to learn from this brand. So, yeah. Anyways, that was the podcast. What do you guys think of everything you've heard today? Let me know. Send me a message. Tweet me back. Send me something, obviously, through my Instagram and Twitter handle. I'm at Sayed_Maroon99 on Twitter, Instagram. Do follow me there. And obviously, till Thursday, don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends about it. Share it to your friends and family. And yeah, thank you for listening. And I hope you have a great day. And yeah, I mean, I have nothing much to say really. But thanks for listening. And you know what to do. Subscribe. And till Thursday, this is your Balmaun signing out. Peace. I'll see you later. Ciao. I don't know how to end it really. So ciao.